Good morning. You've tuned into the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jack, and across from me, returned from his travels, is Mr. Jim Healy. And welcome back, Jim.
It's good to be back. And to my left is Keely Gray, director of The Importance of Being Earnest. That's in middle of last week's productions, two of them, and coming up this weekend. Good morning, Keely.
Good morning. Thank you guys so much for having me again.
Great to have you.
We have lots to talk about, and glad to have Keely here for the beginning of the show, too. Usually we don't introduce the guest until later.
I want to find out her thoughts on rain.
That's right. Cool. We should start that. We should start talking about that right now. That's a great first topic for us. Keely, can I have you go over to microphone number 3 instead of
right
number 4?
Me.
Yeah, or just move the mic. Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much.
Technical difficulties.
That sounds a little better. It's this dang antenna that we have on our roof. It causes no end of headaches that I have to solve and then unsolve.
No. Adventures, Jack.
Adventures, yeah.
Not headaches. These are adventures in the world of bringing radio to community radio to North Idaho.
You're right.
Now, can we hear Keely?
Yeah, that's.
Oh. Well, you guys are the professionals, so I call you the subject matter experts on the technical stuff. So
No.
Make everything. You make us sound good.
This sounds much better.
Jack, Jack's the man. I'm just here as a prop.
Well, okay.
And a good prop you are, Jim. A good prop you are.
Thank you. I have before me the...
What?
The envelopes. No, I have before me...
Do I need a drum roll?
Yeah.
The weather.
This weather what, Jack?
Brought to us by the National Weather Service, I have the weather forecast for the Sandpoint, Idaho area. Currently overcast and 55 degrees, and that is about right, although I did not bring my sunglasses, and I kind of wish I had. Kind of driving into the east.
I noticed when I came down to the station at about 6:20, it was dark and no sun, so and a little bit of wetness on the ground.
Yep, it is wet out there. It definitely rained last night. It's not raining right at this moment, but showers are likely today. Before 11 a.m., it looks like a 70% chance of showers, and then a chance of showers and thunderstorms between 11 a.m. and noon. Then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm afternoon. Well, that sounds like it's the same thing.
I love the use of the word likely and possibly.
Yes.
And it's the same thing, but they give you, why not just say rain possibly the entire day?
Yeah.
They're covering their bases.
Yes.
Making sure that in case they're wrong.
Yeah.
You can weather people are, you know, where else can you have a job where you can be totally wrong? A lot. And still
I say
come
more
in
than
the next
50%
day.
Of the time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like that kind of job.
I know. Let's see. Cloudy. The high today is only 59 degrees.
Perfect.
Becoming south 5 to 8 miles an hour in the morning. Hey, that's right now. And then tonight, a 50% chance of showers and patchy fog, low down to 47 degrees. Tomorrow, warming back up again a little bit, areas of fog, and then mostly sunny tomorrow with a high near 69. Light wind and then partly cloudy tomorrow night, sunny and 74 on Saturday, which sounds pretty perfect to me. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low down to 46 degrees, sunny and 74 on Sunday, and sunny and 75 on Monday. And by the way, that will be October, 75 degrees in October.
October is the first, that's Saturday. Before we get too far, I want to give a shout out to two contributors to KRFY when we have our fundraise coming along. And that's my sister and brother-in-law in Arlington, Virginia. And you might say, why would they contribute? Well, that's because they have a black cylinder in their kitchen and they say, Alexa, 88.5 KRFY. Mm-hmm. And bammo. And so the weather forecast in the D.C. area, which we're all dying to hear, 61, she says, right now, sunny, high of 70, expected a beautiful fall day.
Wow.
I'll take that.
My mother, who I don't think is listening right now, but she sent me an email yesterday, snow in Minneapolis, or that's at least somewhere in the state of Minnesota, I think they got snow.
Well, doesn't Minnesota always get international falls like these? So, you know, like the low in the nation. So maybe international falls.
There's, yeah, there's all sorts of weird things that happen in Minnesota.
Jack says that, you know, being a product of Minnesota.
Yeah, that's true. that's true. Here's another location you may have heard of, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And stop right there. When you say Oklahoma, what do you think of? Just what comes to your mind, Keely?
Oh, that's kind of a loaded question with a theater person, because all I think about is Oklahoma, where the winds come sweeping down the lane.
Okay, you think of a musical.
Of course.
Do you think of, Jack?
Well, now I think of that. Yeah, that Oklahoma, or else The Grapes of Wrath, maybe.
The Dust Bowl.
Merle Haggard. I don't know.
Okie from whatever. Mm-hmm. We went to Tulsa. I had a family reunion, and as the plane landed, I said, my gosh, there's trees.
Oh.
Trees, green.
Yeah.
And as we were moving, going from the airport to the hotel, I said, huh. This looks like northern Indiana. It's green, and it's got trees, which is nothing like I imagined Oklahoma to be.
No, I would not imagine it like that either.
And my cousin who lives there said that that you're thinking about Oklahoma City and that part of the state. But I went to Oklahoma for a first cousin's reunion, and, you know, you think of Tulsa. You know, but boy, what a town. It had the Bob Dylan Museum. Ooh. And right next door is the Woody Guthrie Center that had an exhibition on Bruce Springsteen. I just puddled. I just had an incredible time there. Plus, there's a Jewish museum. There's the Philbrook Estate where they had Antiques Roadshow. And then also there's Tulsa was what, back in the teens, that was a part of town, had black lawyers, black pharmacists, black doctors. Mm-hmm. And that was just sort of leveled, and over 300 people, blacks were killed.
Yeah.
There's a whole museum, and that part of town is amazing. So I'm going back.
Okay. Had you ever been there before?
No. The only time I've been to Oklahoma is in Oklahoma City, going through the airport on a flight.
Yeah.
Have you spent any time in Oklahoma, Keely?
I have not. I actually want to go now, to be honest.
Tulsa. Mm-hmm. Tulsa. And Jack, have you?
I must have driven through from Texas to Minnesota at some point. I think I don't think I could have avoided it, but I have no memory of Oklahoma at all.
Well, I tell you, it was a pleasant surprise. Much like I'm just imagining throughout the United States, there are pleasant surprises in every state where you go, whoa, I didn't know that. And so
when I tell people in Minnesota that I live in Idaho, they think of like Southern Idaho. Well, they think of potatoes and they think of kind of just flat, or I think they think of maybe the Palouse or something like that. They don't imagine that I live near a big lake and mountains and things like that.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, and I'll ask you this, Keely, as well. How often do you think of Boise or Southern Idaho when you think of Idaho? You think of the Panhandle.
Yeah.
You think of reaching to the east, you're touching Montana. You reach to the west, you're touching Washington.
Well, I was born and raised here, so I always think of the Panhandle. So I'm kind of biased, though.
I wonder if the difference in time zones impacts how I think of Idaho, you know, because I think mountain time is in another world.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny, because Montana is only a couple hours away, and it's an hour difference.
Exactly. I love the Pacific time zone, because we are on the easternmost part of the Pacific time zone, which means that we get darker earlier and lighter earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what? You're crinkling.
Yeah, I am. No, I was. You just reminded me of something that I should read more about, which is didn't the United States Senate basically abolish the time change, daylight savings time?
Yeah, daylight savings time.
Are we sticking with that? Are we holding to that? I don't know either. I remember that being a big news story.
Grumble. I have no idea.
I think we're still changing our clocks in a couple weeks here.
Okay. Speaking of change, how's the segue for how's the importance of being earnest, which is, by the way, if you've looked at the Bonner Bee this morning, there's a shameless plug for our newspaper, a beautiful picture of part of the cast of Importance of Being Earnest, and a nice article about the play encouraging everyone to go down to the Panada Theater this Friday and Saturday for the second weekend.
Yes, second and last weekend. This is the last two chances you will get to see this incredible play. And I mean, I know I'm biased because I'm the director, but I just have to say, if audiences' reactions to the show have been any indicator, it is very funny and folks are enjoying themselves immensely.
Can I ask you this? How does it feel for you as a director and the cast members to do, and I would think, just four performances? I mean, you know, you do all this work, build up for it, and four performances, it's history.
Well, great question. And it's one that I think community theaters get asked a lot, because when you think of theater and when you think of Broadway in particular, you're thinking eight shows a week, right? And you run for months on end. Well, in sweet little Idaho, we don't really have that option because we're all working adults. And one of the things that I like to equate it to, which is true in Broadway performances as well, is the glory of theater is that it is not permanent, in that it is one of those beautiful moments that happens. And if you miss it, you miss it, right? It kind of is the preciousness of the experience that you're getting of live theater. And so that's why one of my goals when I started the company was to have performances often, because each one is new and fresh. Each play has a different story, different emotional connection. And it's a totally different experience. And so I think the temperance of it makes it special.
Well, what I'm thinking of, though, is that the difference between four performances and gazillion, that just as your cast is getting in the flow and learning where the audience laughs and things like that, that they're sort of getting control of what more control of what they're doing.
And we've actually had conversations about extending it to six, and maybe we should do like six performances over two weekends or over three weekends. And we're having those conversations as we evolve, because we are a relatively new company. So we want to make sure that we're serving our audience as best we can.
I would kind of think that, I mean, that's exciting to do just four. And I would think it would become kind of rote and boring, feel more like a job if you were doing, eight a week. After about 3 weeks of that, it's like, ooh, I'm ready for something else.
Well, that is the tough job of an actor.
Yeah,
right?
hard to summon that.
Those characters.
Those characters on command like that.
But. Well, it's interesting you say that, because during our rehearsal process before we opened, we had to have the conversation, because this is such a wordy show. I mean, it's very intellectual in the base that, there are long speeches and, there's lots of advanced language in it. And so a lot of my actors, like, we kind of had to have the conversation of, hey, guys, we got to make it fresh. If it's fresh to you, it's going to feel fresh to the audience. And so actually what I told all my actors after tech week was, I want you guys to put your characters away for the whole day tomorrow. I don't want you to pick them back up until you get to the theater. Because if you're living inside these lines the entire day and all this, it's going to become boring to you. Mm-hmm. And you have to live in that fresh moment, because that's a part of the discipline of being an actor, is really experiencing what you're experiencing on stage and making it feel like it's happening for the first time.
Any surprises to you after the first week? Any places where people laughed or didn't laugh, or you were expecting it?
A lot, actually.
Yeah,
there were quite a few moments that were, like, a lot of us, like, that are especially designers and stage managers, those of us who are in the crew that are watching, a lot of us had moments of like, huh, I did not know that would read so well. And then, of course, we had a few foibles on stage where, we had one of our actors, there's a chase sequence. And in, I think it was opening night, the chase sequence it didn't go awry. It was hilarious and wonderful, but he accidentally fell Mm-hmm. And so my actor being the most amazing act, he didn't hurt himself. He's totally fine. But when he fell, he actually used his momentum of the fall to crawl for a good portion of the chase. And that was never something that happened in his blocking rehearsals. And we were dying in the booth because it was like, that has never happened before. But the audience loved it.
Thought it was part of it.
Yeah.
What do you do between the weekends? What are the things you're looking at in between the first weekend and the second weekend?
Well, ticket sales, of course, but okay. But we also have what's called a pickup rehearsal, which we're having tonight. And a pickup rehearsal serves multiple purposes. The first and foremost purpose is for us to get a little refresher and to make sure that we're not forgetting what we're doing. But it's also kind of, and it's funny how it ends up being this way. And as a director, I kind of just have to accept it and kind of put my funny hat on. It becomes kind of a way for the actors to blow off some steam and have some fun and get silly with these characters, and just really explore just what it feels like, because they don't have an audience, right? They've been practicing without one, but they feel like they've been rehearsing this show just as it is. And so this is their moment to kind of just have fun and be loose and be silly. And Young Frankenstein's pickup rehearsal was, I probably hurt because my face hurt because I was laughing so hard.
Perfect, perfect. We're here in the studios of 88.5 KRFY in the Tiki Room. Jim That's and Jack, right. We're in the Tiki Room. Did you know that, Keely, that this is called the Tiki Room?
I feel like I've heard that before.
We need something like fruity cocktails or something.
Mm-hmm. There needs to be a pineapple, guys.
There you go. There
That's
you
right. Go. That's the symbol of hospitality, right?
Right.
Yeah.
We're talking with Keely Gray, and she is the director of the play at the Panada this weekend on Friday and Saturday at 7 o'clock. Doors open at
6:30,
and tickets are available at the door as well as online.
Correct.
And from the responses of the first weekend, you don't want to miss this.
No, and we're getting lots of ticket sales, and we have lots of folks who are saying, we're coming and we're bringing 10 of our friends, which we love to hear.
That's wonderful.
Good time to mention, where can you get tickets?
Our website, which is lporep.com, lporep.com.
Let's take a little music break and then come back to Keely to talk about the play itself for somebody who might not be familiar with Oscar Wilde and this play. On this date in 1994, the Pointer Sisters got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And the Pointer Sisters, I think of the 80s and early 90s, and here is, for me, I think their most famous. I love this song. You just can't not move to it. It's not Jump, and it's not Neutron Dance. It is Play It, Jack.
Romeo and Juliet, Samson and Delilah.
Pointer Sisters with Fire.
Love it.
They were the first ones to perform it, right? Or it was released by them. I know who wrote it. You probably do too.
Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, but he gave it to him, right? Or sold it to him or whatever. He didn't release it until his live album came out.
That multiple live set in the mid 80s, which was quite a surprise to me because I go, oh, he wrote it. But yeah. I think they're the first ones who latched on. I think it's a great song and just.
Yeah.
You want to flow to it. We're going to turn to Keely Gray and to talk about the importance of being artist and someone out in the listening audience who might not be familiar with Oscar Wilde's play. I think it was first performed in 1895. Mm-hmm. What are they getting into?
Audience members are getting into a lot of frivolity, comedy, and mistaken identity. I have so much fun with this play. I've sat with it for a number of years because in my teaching days, I used it as an educational opportunity for my students to practice higher language. But the comedy itself is so timeless. And that's kind of why we were inspired to do this production now, is because with all of the themes that we have present in the show, it's very reminiscent of our Instagram, social media personas that we put out to the world to try and be taller and thinner and richer, when really we're just running away from who we are. And the beautiful part about this show is the character spends so much time trying to make themselves be a certain way, i.e. Ernest, that they end up thinking they're lying, but ending up telling the truth. Which is such a beautiful irony to have. And it's like, you'll have to see the show to learn more about that. But that's probably one of my favorite parts of this show, is the mistaken identities and the fact that these characters think that they're blustering themselves up and they're making themselves seem so attractive by lying, 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 only to have been telling the truth.
Go ahead, Jack. I was going to ask a question about the play itself.
Yeah, I'm interested too. And I am one, maybe the only person in this room who's never seen it or read the whole thing.
And what are you doing the next 2 nights?
I know. I'm certainly thinking about it. Okay. I would like to go. It is tricky, you know. I have a babysitter situation now where I have to.
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah. That's right. You have a baby now.
I know. It's a lot harder to get out.
You're not going to leave me tonight.
Yeah.
Now. You and Mom need date night.
Yeah.
What we should do is bring back the cry room. Do you know the Panda Theater had a cry room?
I did know that.
Cry room west of the Mississippi, my understanding is.
Really?
Yes. And someday you come over to the Panda, I'll show you where. It's no longer obviously there, but you can see where it once was.
And if you take your children into the theater, watch a show, and if they start to cry, you take them out.
You take them in there, and you can continue.
Dedicated room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can continue. What I'd like to ask Keely is, we're talking during fire and not listening, full-eared to the Pointer Sisters. We're talking about paying licensing fees. Mm. Now, if a play is old, and when I say old, let me say, like, you decide to do Hamlet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to pay licensing fees?
It depends upon what type of. And the word is called adaptation. So if you, there's such a thing as public domain, which anything that is over, I believe it's 91 years is the current number for public domain. If anything is over 91 years, then it is in the public domain and you can perform it free from rights, or you can adapt it and rewrite the story with your own, joie de vivre. And so for us, like, we use the example of Hamlet. Obviously, Shakespeare was from the 1600s, so long since been in the public domain. Ernest, Oscar Wilde being prolific in 1800s, were obviously in public domain territory as well.
Okay.
So there are several adaptations of The Importance of Being Ernest. I've actually dabbled in one myself that I shortened up for to perform with teenagers. But with public domain, it kind of makes it a little bit easier to perform and to produce shows, which is, I think, why Shakespeare can be so accessible to community theaters, and Importance of Being Ernest as well.
Okay, but then let me ask you this. If you pick a play that is not in public domain, mm-hmm. and you You pay for the script.
Mm-hmm.
Are you allowed to change it?
No, you are not.
So you can't delete a line. You can't add some words.
Not without the author's express permission.
And if the author's dead?
If the author's dead, then you have to go to the publishing company that it belongs to. Which there are several. It's interesting because we were discussing the musical world because mm-hmm. the musical mm-hmm. world is much more, shall I say, intense about the rights being performed because musicals are so popular and, you know, have such big audiences. And there's music involved, right? It's
right.
not just the words, it's the choreography, it's the music, it's the blocking, it's the script itself. So there's a lot more to musicals, which makes them harder to produce typically and way more expensive. Regular plays that don't have music are not quite as expensive, but depending upon their popularity, they can be more expensive. And plays usually end up being about, depending upon the popularity and longevity of it, anywhere from like $200 a performance to $500 to $1,000 a performance.
So when you do a musical, for example, like mm-hmm. you did Young Frankenstein, mm-hmm. when you're paying for the licensing is for the script,
mm-hmm.
the songs,
mm-hmm.
anything else?
You do have the choice of using the original choreography if you choose to.
Okay.
When shows premiere on Broadway, especially musicals, they do have choreography that comes with it. And they do give you that option to utilize it. You don't have to. That is one thing that is optional. You can mm-hmm, have your own mm-hmm. choreography. We actually had our own original choreography done by Paige McDonald and Taryn Quayle for Young Frankenstein. But you do have that option.
Can you imagine Hamilton? What that must be like?
It's not even available, if that gives you any indicator. It's not even available. I know. I get lots of questions, especially when I was a teacher, about shows like, oh, can we do this? Can we do Wicked? Can we do Hamilton? Can we do all this? I'm like, oh, guys, I wish we could, but we would get sued.
Yeah. It's still on Broadway, right?
Correct.
I mean, it's still in its touring. Original run.
It's
yep.
touring.
If a show is,
oh, right.
Yep.
Yeah, it's
Spokane.
Yeah.
If a show is touring or if they are on Broadway currently, they are off limits to
right.
be produced in any other venue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's generally like tours. When I say tours, I mean designated tours, like the mm-hmm. tours that come through at the INB and stuff like that. Those
right.
ones are ones that are specific to, you know, the
yeah.
what's the word I'm looking for? Success of the production.
Right. Well, let me ask you a question in terms of earlier this year, the Lake Pondere Repertory Theater Company produced Young Frankenstein. What are the different challenges bringing a non-musical as opposed to a musical? Like, what are the challenges? I'm sure Young Frankenstein presented certain challenges. Did Importance of Being Earnest present certain challenges to you as a director?
Great question. I think more as a producer than a director. Because with Young Frankenstein, we had the popularity and the recognition mm-hmm. of Mel Brooks, of the movie,
sure.
of, you know, the story. Like we kind of had that natural built-in excitement about the show. Importance of Being Earnest is known. It's a classic. I mean, I studied it in my drama studies at U of I. But outside of the theater world, you know, yet most folks, unless they've seen yeah. the movie with Colin Firth and Reese Witherspoon, they're kind of like, what is that? So as a producer, it's a little bit more of a tough sell, just like a lot of plays in general, especially if they haven't been turned into movies, because your audiences aren't going to be as familiar. So something that we really tried to do with Young Frankenstein and with our Speakeasy Productions was kind of establish this level of trust with our community of like, hey, you know, we're going to produce something that's really good. That's high quality, and you can trust us to have a great theatrical experience, and we hope you enjoy it. And so the idea of making it accessible for our community was probably the biggest difference between the two. As far as production goes, Young Frankenstein was a beast, but we knew we had to make a splash in the community.
And you did.
Well, thank you for that. We worked very hard, and I was very tremendously proud of that project, and as I'm proud of this project. I will say, though, that the crew that I've had, and I know I gush about them all the time, but they've made my job so easy. And just to be able to be creative with this play has been such a joy. And so it was a little bit easier. I don't want to say like easy is a word I don't like to say out loud, but it's been a little bit less stressful, let's say.
Now, speaking of your crew, I volunteered at the Panada last weekend for two performances and am doing that this weekend. And I'm also on the cleanup crew, and we went down to the green room to see if things needed to be emptied, trash baskets. And there were the costumes. And wow.
I know,
right? I mean, boy, I looked at them, and because I saw them on the stage, on the people, but just hanging there, I go, cool.
I know. We're so lucky to have Renee. She's just jumped in and had so much fun with this. And she cracked me up because she's so efficient. Not only is she like a genius creatively, but she's so efficient that there were specific dresses that were her dream dresses, which we got, by the way. All mm-hmm. of the dresses that mm-hmm. she wore her vision are there and on stage. But she was so efficient that she made sure that she had backup dresses in case these ones didn't show up. Yes, this is how amazing she is, because she was ordering a lot of them, and specialty costumes such as that they're kind of hard to find. And when you're ordering them from an online source, it can kind of be a little bit tricky on timing on when you're going to get them. And so I have to applaud her, because the dresses that she had as her quote unquote backups were beautiful as well. So as a director and as a woman, I'm sitting there looking at those dresses going, oh. And my actors and the male actors, I will say, our suits are just glorious. The suits are phenomenally beautiful.
Are the costumes period, they're 1890s appropriate?
They are. Yeah, Renee cool. is kind of a history nerd. Actually, a lot of my cast and crew are. I learned more about this production, but more about the time frame mm-hmm. than I had known. And I've been sitting with this play for years. We actually learned, and my actor, Corey Repass, who plays Algernon, was so upset with us. We learned that Algernon, his character's name, means man with mustache.
Well, I didn't know that.
I know. Yeah. See, the more you know. Uh-huh. And so Corey, bless his heart, because he's the best actor and he listens to his directors and designers. He got the mustache and he is man with mustache. Uh-huh. But oh my goodness, does his girlfriend and him not like it at all? Uh-huh.
I have experimented with a mustache a couple times myself. It's always seems like a good idea at the time, mm-hmm. and then when you shave it off, you're like, oh, that's so much better. Well, I mean, what am I doing?
And yeah, it's
what
was hard, I thinking? Because there are very few men that can really pull off a stash. And I will say, if you haven't seen the show yet, one of our actors, who's actually brand spanking new, this is his very first play. His name's McCallum. He came into auditions with a curly Q mustache, mm-hmm. and it actually curls, and he has it trained perfectly. And it was so perfect because he ended up playing Lane, the butler to Algernon.
Okay, very cool,
right? Mm-hmm. So that worked out perfectly.
So I've never read the play. You were exposed to it. Was it the movie or in school, or when did you?
I first was exposed to it in college because part of my studies to get my theater degree was play analysis. Mm-hmm. And I still have the book. It is probably as
thick. It's radio.
I know. I'm like using my hand gestures. It is a very, very, very thick book because it's got over 20 plays in it. Mm-hmm. And Importance of Being Earnest was one of the ones that we needed to study. Mm-hmm. During that time, at the time I didn't pay too much attention to it. I thought it was funny. It was quirky. It was silly. And then I came back to it when I started teaching theater at the Music Conservatory. And I was looking for some good, accessible scenes and monologues for my students to tackle and have some fun with, because part of my job as their teacher is to make sure they know what the classics are, and that they know what elevated language feels like. And Oscar Wilde gives you such a great opportunity to really chew on these really like words that we don't use very often. And so that's been really, really fun to see it come to life with adults. It was fun with the kids because they dove into it and had a great time, but I had always dreamed about performing it with adults.
Yeah. Oscar Wilde was, of course, a novelist, a short story writer, and a playwright. Mm-hmm. He wrote other plays too, mm-hmm. right?
This was, I think, one of his last, because he ran into some legal trouble, right, shortly after this was produced. And so I think this was one of his last shows that he did. Another one that I enjoy thoroughly, I think this is his only, and I could be wrong here, I'm saying it live on air, I think this was his only frivolous comedy that was just a pure comedy, because his other play that I love as well is called An Ideal Husband. And that one is very similar to importance of being earnest, but it actually has a little bit more drama and intrigue and scandal about it. And yes, there is a film with Julianne Moore. But Ideal Husband also has that elevated language. And I think we actually performed a good portion of it on KRFY this summer.
That is correct. Yes, at the membership drive.
Mm-hmm. That's everybody, right. Yeah. Did Pictures of Dorian Gray have a play adaptation?
I believe so, but I'm not 100%.
Something's triggering, like... You know,
it's one of his most popular tales.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think that's probably the only thing of his that I have read.
That triggers. Gray. That is this Friday and Saturday, the last day of September and the first day of October at the Panda Theater. The Importance of Being Earnest at 7:00. Tickets are available online or at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And we have just been so fortunate to have Keely Gray not only here in the studio but in the community bringing live theater to North Idaho. Anything in closing, like down the road, what's ahead for LPO?
We are working on many big things at this moment in time. To share with everybody, our goal is to get to a place, we won't be able to get there in the next year, but in the next 5 years, our goal is to eventually produce 4 to 6 productions a year with multiple directors and crew from our community. And part of our mission is to train and educate those who have always wanted to be involved in the theater. Even our youth, we actually have a youth program as well in our education.
Peter Pan.
It was amazing.
That was a home run.
Oh, we loved it so much. They did such a great job. But our goal is to train professionals. We kind of are modeling ourselves after the Spokane Civic Theater, which has been around since 1962. Cool. I am really hoping that
60 years,
right? I'm really hoping that after I die, LPO Rep is still around and going and doing all sorts of amazing productions well past my generation.
Well, break a leg or two.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. We'll break all of them.
Okay, one more time. Importance of Being Earnest, Friday and Saturday at the Panda Theater at 7:00. And want to thank Keely and pick up the Bonner Bee. It has a... article on the front page, and then you continue on A3.
I love that you know that, Jim. Thank you.
I read it this morning at about 5:30, so I was awake and whatever. Thank you so much for taking time out and coming.
Thank you for the invite. I always appreciate your time.
We're going to have a little music break before we get into the events. And if I say Woody Guthrie, probably his most famous tune is This Land Is Your Land. And rather than do a Peter, Paul, and Mary or a Pete Seeger or whatever version, here is Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings with a version of This Land Is Your Land. And if you've never heard it, you're in for a real treat.
This land is your land.
That is Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. If the Dap Kings sound familiar, they backed Amy Winehouse in Rehab, that song. Yeah.
Okay.
Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, I became familiar with this song and that group from the film Up in the Air with George Clooney. And then that, you know, one rabbit hole leads you to another, led me to a bunch of Sharon Jones, who died way too young. She was an incredible voice and a vocal arranger. So that is Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land, done in a manner that you probably haven't heard before.
I certainly hadn't heard it. Well, except for, as we mentioned, I have seen that movie, so I must have heard it at some point.
I think it kicks off the beginning of it, I think. I could be wrong.
The author of the track, the song, Woody Guthrie, you went to the... museum.
Yes. Yeah. The Woody Guthrie Center is on the same block as the Bob Dylan Museum in Tulsa, mm-hmm. Oklahoma. And I spent a morning there and I left feeling like I could spend days at both. There's so many items there to look at that have become so much a part of our cultural identity and that have lived on. And what a treat to have these two incredible talents and personalities together.
Yeah. The Bob Dylan Museum, I'm guessing Bob Dylan, this is like the official Bob Dylan Museum.
Opened in May of this year.
Oh, wow.
It's, okay. It's a recent. I could be mistaken, but I think the people who purchased the Kaiser Foundation or something like that, who purchased the Woody Guthrie archives and located it because he was in Oklahoma from Okemah, Oklahoma, located in Tulsa. I'd have to find out why necessarily Tulsa, but as opposed to Oklahoma City or someplace else. But then Bob Dylan, I think his over 100,000 artifacts were purchased, I think, also by the Kaiser Foundation. And Dylan says that the number one influence in his early years, Woody Guthrie. And so to have both of them, and you can get one ticket that you can scoot into both museums.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's nice. Dylan has no real connection to Oklahoma other than Woody Guthrie, right?
I'm sure he's appeared in concert there. The guy never stops touring.
The never-ending tour.
Yeah, never-ending tour. But, you know, I mean, to go through all sorts of just the way they have it arranged, you get a headset, and then you have this little, like, a deck of cards. It's that size, but there's all sorts of it. You go up, and there's a thing on the wall that you hit it on the thing on the wall, and boom.
Yeah.
You're into that part of the exhibit with your headphones, and then you go to the next one, boom, and just a real treat. Then upstairs they had footage from different concerts in his career from Newport Folk Festival in 1965 when he went electric and things like that.
Yeah. Famous moments, yeah.
Well, you stop and think. Mm-hmm. How many live people today have museums? You know, I mean, how much, you know, I wonder if at 3 o'clock in the morning he walks through it and goes, I don't remember that. You know, they had notebooks, they had lyrics, they had, you know, and gosh, how must he, I wonder, I'm sure he's visited it. He's been down there. Maybe he hasn't, knowing how eccentric he is. But to go through that museum and there's your life.
Yeah.
Or a part of your life.
He's not famous. Well, not famous. He's infamous, or he's been known to sort of travel totally incognito. He's much more well known for his music than he is for his appearance. And if he takes off the great big hat and you know and kind of goes looking like a normal guy, maybe the most famous living American musician. He's able to move around in the real world when he wants to.
He could be next to you on a park bench.
Yeah. I wonder if he would ever do that. Anyway.
I'm sure it's just
a theory.
Anyway.
I went to Duluth this summer, by the way. Bob Dylan Way up there.
Hibbing, Minnesota.
Yeah. And there's little plaques all around the city where he played here, you know, once. Or here's the armory where he saw Buddy Holly, you know, 2 days before the plane went down or whatever.
And Clear Lake.
Yeah. A lot of Dylan stuff up there, but no museum. And I bet they are kicking themselves for not being able to get
it. That's a tough call. Dylan exited out of Minnesota in the late 50s, and then has that period of time from about 59, 60 in New York City to about 65, this burst of creativity that you cannot account for.
Yeah.
You know, there's just no way this guy was channeling tunes, lyrics, creativity. And when you go through the museum, you go, whoa, and this is coming from somebody who's 20, 21. Who taught Shakespeare? You know, who taught Bob Dylan? You don't. They just, you know, I stand in awe.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, we have about 8 minutes left.
Okay,
I didn't bring up our music.
I have something that I can bring up. Tomorrow night. Well, first of all, tonight at Paddler's Ale House is Thursday Trivia Night. That's up in Ponderay on Vermeer Drive. Invites you to join in and test your abstract knowledge against other hopheads. There will be beer.
Okay.
What's abstract knowledge?
It's trivia. Man. Yeah.
Trippy man.
We've both done trivia nights before.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm not very good at it, but...
we could have a care of why trivia team, I think.
Yeah, we could. We need somebody, though, in science.
We do.
Sports.
Right. Yeah. We'd clean up in the music
maybe.
Column, I think. But
maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Then also... Tomorrow night, Paddler's Ale House Food for Our Children fundraiser. Join in at Paddler's Ale House, 100 Vermeer Drive in Ponderay from noon to 8 o'clock for live music, food cart, silent auction, snowblower raffle, and cornhole. Help raise funds for the 1/3 Bonner County kids who need help with food.
A third,
yeah. You know, and that's Food for Our Children fundraiser at the Paddler's Ale House. Important. So that's something to keep on your agenda if you're free tomorrow between noon and 8 o'clock.
On Saturday, there is a neighborhood fair at Winter Ridge Natural Foods. It is a block party with music, food, vendors, samples, and good local details, including everything you want to know about the Pine Street Woods, Save the Sled Hill, the Kinnick-Sioux Folk School, and you may have noticed there's a theme here. It's all to benefit the Kinnick-Sioux Land Trust. But it is at Winter Ridge Natural Foods, which is at 703 West Lake Street. If you aren't familiar with town, but everybody knows where Winter Ridge is pretty much, out on the corner of Boyer and Highway 2.
Behind Dubs.
Yeah. That could be fun. 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Apparently in the parking lot, or I don't know if they'll block off a couple
of
streets
or something.
They'll
do something there.
Yeah.
Also on Saturday, as you're moving around at McDuff's Beer Hall, Hoptoberfest at 220 Cedar hosts this event featuring fresh hop beers, patio games, the Greek food truck with a German twist, and live music from 1 to 9. So, you know, it seems like you can walk over from Winter Ridge over to McDuff's Beer Hall on Cedar Street and participate in Hoptoberfest.
Greek food with a German twist. It's worth going just to find out what that
is. Absolutely. And are you a beer drinker? What's fresh hop beers?
I'm not a beer expert. I suppose that would be some kind of new, a brighter tasting kind of IPA sort of thing, hoppy. I don't know. What do I know?
I worked in a brewery to put myself through undergraduate school, and I...
Did you know?
I learned to not like beer because I was in the bottle house, bottles were blowing up all around me, and I wore beer home, and it's sticky, and during hot, humid summer months, I just...
Yeah, stale beer is not a fun, pleasant smell, and it hangs around, I think. Anyway, but they call it Hoptoberfest, not Oktoberfest.
No, it's a celebration of hops.
Yes, and Greek food with a German twist.
I wonder if there's a fresh, they've used the adjectives fresh and hop. Mm-hmm. When I lived in Slovakia for 2 years, there was a celebration in the fall of, I want to say it was called Burchak, that was immature wine where they put it in barrels and it was just beginning the process of fermenting. And it was dangerous because it tasted like pop. And a couple of... Uh-huh. So I wonder if fresh hop beer is immature. Maybe not. I'm sure somebody's out there yelling at their radio saying... Idiots.
Yes.
Fresh hop beer.
We know exactly what it is.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, well.
Rest with your knowledge.
Uh-huh.
We're moving on. On Friday night, live music with Bright Moments Jazz at McDuff's Beer Hall on Cedar Street from 1 to 4. That'd be during Hoptoberfest.
Hmm. Okay. Well, okay.
Cool.
I will mention one more time that the importance of being earnest, who we spoke to Keely Gray earlier today. She's the director of the show. But The Importance of Being Earnest, Oscar Wilde's classic comedy, is on stage at the Panada Theater on Friday, September 30th, and Saturday, October 1st. That is at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30.
Be there. I'll be there, and I'll wave hello to you. We would be remiss if we did not bring up the online fundraiser for KRFY, your community radio station. It goes from October 1st to the 9th, and it's a fall online auction. And you go to www.biddingforgood.com/KRFY. And then you can see all sorts of neat items, a tropical island condo, sailboat excursion, fly fishing trip, fine dining, Schweitzer gift basket, bottles of reserve wines, and so much more. And this is one of our key fundraisers here at the radio station to keep us on the air. October 1st to the 9th. Our fall online auction. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, you can go to our website and follow the prompts.
There'll be a link. Yep, a link from the website. If it's not there now, it will be when the auction opens on October 1st. I just went to, just to check that out, I went to biddingforgood.com/KRFY and opened it up. I have it here before me. Okay. And it's, I'm scrolling through the items right now. A $50 gift certificate from the Alpine Shop. An afternoon sail on Lake Pendere. Some nice art paintings. A book and CD compilation. A birdhouse. The evergreen wreath, which I think I got last year, and I will try to get again this year unless somebody's trying to outbid me. And we have what we're calling the Jerry caps.
I see them.
Yeah. Our former DJ, our late, dearly departed DJ, Jerry Warren.
The best.
Yeah. He ran the 60s show.
60s guru.
And did an excellent job with it until he passed away, unfortunately. But he had, for himself, made a custom KRFY cap, ball cap, because we had never sold them before. He had it made, and it now hangs here in our studio, and we have had a dozen replicas made. Actually, Bernie Moser, the Wednesday morning, Easy Wednesday morning host, had a dozen of them made and donated them to the auction. The value here is listed as priceless, and that is correct, but you can bid on one of a dozen of these caps, and they'll just go, I suppose, to the highest bidder.
No, I think there is a limit.
Yeah,
it's a buy it now.
Oh, okay.
Buy it now that you say I will pay X amount of dollars for it. And I do want to say that these caps are special because if you knew Jerry, he was a White Sox diehard, and you almost would have to peel a White Sox cap off of him to put. But he willingly had made and put on a KRFY hat, and they are really nice. And what a good way to support the radio station as well as to celebrate Jerry, who we continue to miss him.
Yeah, they should. And I should mention they're just like Jerry's is. They're the like woven, embroidered KRFY kind of thing. They're not just screen printed on a baseball cap. They're really nice hats.
Nope. These are good.
Yeah.
Jack, this is the last Thursday in September. Whoosh.
It goes by so fast.
September just exited the building. Mm-hmm. Hello, October, this Saturday.
Wow. Well, I guess that's it then. It is now 9 o'clock. We'll see you in October, Jim. next week, we're talking to Jan Palant.
Yes. I think,
from the Philharmonia.
They have a show. Hey, Jack, yeah. I'll see you next month, buddy.
Yeah. See you next month. Everybody stay tuned for Bird Note and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long right here on 88.5 KRFY.